there are overwhelming, turbulent times, but that also means there is major potential to fill the cracks with new ideas and to transform these destructive systems. There are specific root causes for problems and holistic solutions everywhere. There is room for prosperity, there is room for regeneration and a shift in values. Another reality is possible, and that's what we're exploring here today. Welcome to Sage Talking.
My name is Dr. Rupini Deepa Rajagopalan. I head up the ESG office at Berenberg Bank, based in Germany. We are actually the second oldest bank in the world. Not a lot of people know that. I head up the ESG office at the wealth and asset management side, where we manage about, about approximately 50 billion assets under management. I joined in 2018. Where I built up the ESG office from scratch. So it was actually quite interesting for me at that time to be part of the whole ESG movement when it was really getting pushed, and to be able to build a strategy for one of the oldest banks in the world, especially in the asset management side, was a challenge I wanted to take. And I was very happy and excited to be part of it. My purpose and passion was and has been in ESG for a couple of years. Before that, I did my PhD in ESG, but with a specialization actually in finance. So it's actually finance, but with the ESG kick to it. And that's how I got into the whole ESG world. I was very interested in understanding, how one can do good in finance. I actually coined the term finance with a heart because previously I was a junior professor at the University of Hamburg, and I worked a couple of years in the banking sector in US and Malaysia, and specifically in investment banking, where at that time, years ago, people were not fairly excited about ESG or weren't really aware of ESG. So I came into this ESG world even before the hype, so to speak. And since then, I have been in this, and I'm very excited to share what we've been doing in the last couple of years.
You have done some quite interesting work, I must say, and kind of building all of that up must have been also quite the journey. So maybe you could just explain, obviously, to also just better explain this term for the rest of the podcast for a better understanding, what exactly ESG is, what it stands for, and also where and how it started, kind of who initiated it, where did it originate, because often these developments, or also if it's products or trends or mindsets, anything like that, it often pops up. And sometimes people don't even question where it came from and where it started, or don't know. So maybe you could explain that a little better.
Yeah, sure. So the term ESG, it actually means environmental, social, and governance. And really, ESG is about incorporating environmental, social, and governance standards in financial analysis. Sounds sounds a bit complicated, but actually it's not really complicated. So ESG, actually, if I believe correctly, was first mentioned in 2006 in the UNPRI, which actually is the United Nations Principle for Responsible Investment. It's an organization, and they had, I believe, a report published at that time where they referred to two other reports. If I'm not mistaken, it's the Freshfield report and a Who Cares Wins report, who also somehow termed the ESG criteria terminology in the report, asking investors, or I mean, asking asset managers to incorporate ESG into their financial analysis. That means looking at not just financial information, but also this what we call non-financial information, environmental data, CO2 emissions, social information like labor standards and governance issues like how independent is the board, these kind of information also in financial analysis to basically understand if a company is sustainable in the long term, using not just financial information, but these ESG information. So it has been there for many, many years now. It's only, taken a big jump, I would say, in the last couple of years, of course, with the whole movement of, you know, environmental movement, and, you know, of course, Greta Thunberg pushing the E. So it's got a little bit of a more of a pushing the last couple of years, but it has been there since 2006, which actually is quite a long time. And when I started ESG or looking into ESG in 2012, it was really, really, really hard or difficult to even find anything online about ESG. And at that time, when I was doing investment banking, I had no clue what ESG was. And when I started doing this, I realized, wow, there is something good that can come out of finance. And that's why I got into this. So that's a little bit of ESG. I hope that was helpful.
Yeah, definitely. More than enough. Thank you so much. Yeah, and that is also what I want to actually just dive deeper into, the questions of, is ESG, is it genuine? Is it transformative? Because obviously there is so much greenwashing going on. There's actually a whole library now of words that are similar to greenwashing that like refer to different types and levels of greenwashing, which is just insane. So there are, you know, many people who are very unsure about, you know, is it genuine? Is it going to be progressive? Is it actually going to be used in the right ways? And obviously from its origin, the way it started, the kind of the criteria for it and also the guidelines, it's like, where does that stem from? And, you know, also the, let's say if a group of people start something, it's like, what are their motives? What was their agenda? What was their thinking of kind of bringing that alive? That obviously also always plays into what a certain concept is and how it's going to be practiced. So I want to know from you, do you think that ESG is, you know, enough for truly changing the investment industry, since there's, as I said, already so much greenwashing and also purposeful misinterpretation of the guidelines? Or do you think, is it just more of a starting point with more radical changes yet to come?
Yeah, I think you've hit a lot of important notes right there. I mean, we can start with the greenwashing thematic. It is definitely something everyone has to be careful. And especially as I come from the investment industry, we are also very aware of greenwashing and greenwashing out there. And we ourselves make sure that our products are not categorized under greenwashing. And one of my role as the head of the ESG office is to make sure there's no greenwashing term, or no greenwashing is done in general in any of our investment products. So just to give you a little bit of a background, so that it gets a little bit more a human touch to this. So before I joined Berenberg, as I came from an academic side, you know, from an academic side, there's always this fear of, is the industry actually doing what it's supposed to do? And initially, I didn't want to so to speak, jump across and get into the real world, so to speak, because I was afraid back then. This is what we were talking 5-6 years ago, of, you know, the industry not actually doing what it's supposed to do. If they were really supposed to incorporate ESG into financial analysis, are they really doing it or just faking it? And which is why I initially didn't want to join or to come to cross over into the real world, so to speak. But I'm happy I did, because we were able to create, or I was able to, with the team and all the portfolio managers, work together to create a strategy that is really, really meant to be ESG, you know? And that's a bit different. Going back to your question, yes, we have to be careful of greenwashing out there, because everyone now wants to do ESG. It seems to be like the hype thing. And I don't believe that. I think ESG intrinsically is just important. We don't even have to put a label to it. It's just generally good. You know, having or investing in companies that are generally having good governance, who are looking to create sustainable future, are companies in the long run who would just fare out well. You know, these are innovative companies, and these are companies that, in our view, you know, would have good track records going forward. And I think that's just what it should be. You know, the labeling and so forth, I think that comes up with marketing and all these other things going around it, I think in general, we just need to step back a little bit and understand why are we trying to incorporate ESG? What is the main mission of incorporating ESG? Is to really just invest in good companies, because, you know, as an investment manager, we still have a fiduciary duty to get returns. And what is that? Is to make sure we invest in good companies. And ESG is an added, so to speak, information that we use. And however, in the last couple of years, there are people who are using this as a hype and, you know, trying to say we are 100% ESG, or we are doing all this by trying to market to get more, you know, to trying to get more money and so forth. But we shouldn't allow that. We should make sure whatever we're saying is true. And that should be the case. And, you know, you asked also, you know, the people who started this back then, what is their real reason for having ESG? I think it's just generally they wanted change. You know, they wanted to have, or wanted investment managers to look at companies in a different way. And there are thousands of studies out there, academic studies, who actually indicate that using ESG information in your financial analysis is actually quite good, and can actually, you know, you can actually choose companies, or you can actually follow companies that are doing well once you incorporate ESG information. So I think in the end of the day, why we're doing ESG and the people who started this, I think it's just all about trying to do good, trying to change, you know, change the way we look at companies in general. And in the end, it's for a sustainable future.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, because how far then, you know, what defines kind of ESG or sustainable investing? What is that spectrum for the definition? Because, and what you're saying now, and I think this is like a huge problem, there are these guidelines, and sometimes with those, I have a feeling sometimes lines can get blurred. And obviously, I said, if people have certain agendas, big companies, we see that all the time, kind of, you know, just playing this field and always, you know, manipulating these lines and trying to kind of continue business as usual with a front of sustainability and ethics, etc. So right now, talking about what you just said, could a, for example, huge fossil fuel company, as you said, the return, like on the investment, there must be also profits made in investing. I mean, obviously, or else it wouldn't exist. Mm-hmm. Could a huge fossil fuel company, where you would say, okay, generally investing in a fossil fuel company would probably, you know, get you some profits because they're just huge companies who make like the most insane profits every year. And that fossil fuel company has, you know, started or has a big part, a big department that is dedicated to renewable energies. We're seeing this with fossil fuel companies who have renewable energies, and they kind of advertise the hell out of that. And sometimes you don't even know how big a part that is of the company. But the fact is, that's there. Under ESG guidelines, could you be, or could somebody be investing into a fossil fuel company that has a big part, you know, kind of driving also renewable energy as well? Is that possible?
I mean, so just to give the listeners and everyone an understanding. So in the last couple of years, 1 or 2 years, there's been huge regulation in Europe, especially now there's Article 6, Article 8, Article 9 funds that have been categorized by regulation, where investment managers have to follow certain terminology when in terms of their funds. So these funds, there are already certain standards that need to be followed if they were, for example, to say that they're fully an Article 9 fund, which is what we call a full green, full ESG fund, then they won't be allowed to invest in certain types of industries. So that's just to give everyone an understanding that there has been huge, I would say, great strides in the industry on the regulation side to make sure that we are averting greenwashing and we're trying to get away from that. So there is really a big drive from the regulators to ensure there's no greenwashing. I know we're not talking about greenwashing. I'm going to get back to your question shortly.
Yeah.
Just to give everyone an understanding on where I'm going through and where I'm getting. Is that so there is already regulation that is being trickled down to investment managers. And when they are investing in companies, for example, like fossil fuels or all this sort, it really depends on how they actually define their funds. So there could be semi-ESG funds or non-ESG funds, or also, of course, non-ESG funds won't have any criterias or set exclusion criterias where they're allowed them to invest in the whole investment universe, so to speak. So we need to actually understand that, you know, a fund has, for example, different kinds of steps or different kinds of standards that they have to follow before they can call themselves ESG. So for example, we have certain exclusion criteria where we exclude, for example, thermal coal mining, more than 5% of share revenues for all our funds and mandates. And then we don't invest in these certain kinds of energy companies with this, you know, or unconventional oil and gas, more than 5% of share revenues for all our funds and mandates. But for only certain funds, they are fully excluded where we say they are ESG targeted or impact focused funds. So coming back to your question, of course, yeah, it's about the transition story, right? All fossil fuel companies are going renewable, and everyone comes to us, how do we understand the transition? And are we allowed to invest in these companies that are going through this transition phase? Number one, it really depends on how the fund is and how the fund is being categorized. Are you allowed to actually invest in these kind of companies in the first place? And secondly, how do you view the transition story? And exactly what you said, is it greenwashing? You know, is it just their marketing? And this is where I believe data is very, very important to really understand what the company is actually doing and to actually check year on year if they are following, for example, what they're saying. And this is where engagement comes in to really check, are they actually saying or walking the talk, you know? And that's I think, really important. So on one hand, it's really about, you know, the type of fund, the ESG fund, what are the exclusion criteria? On the other hand, sorry, it's also about really understanding the company and trying to see, are they really doing what they're saying? And I think that's really important.
Yeah. I mean, because the thing is, you know, there, I think there can be so much discrepancy between terminology and the action, obviously, that is behind it, of what you just touched on. Because I think the main thing of greenwashing is the terminology, these buzzwords that are neither, you know, protected by any laws that you can just use and kind of make people think that something is greener or green at all, if you want to say it like that. And so, yeah, thank you for kind of touching on that and explaining that a little further, because I think it can be sometimes very confusing. What would that look like, the follow-up? You know, if you're keeping tabs on what is happening at a company where you want to see if they're actually, as you said, you know, walking the walk, not just talking the talk.
Yeah, so I think, you know, for us at Berenberg, we are, I would say, really keen or very very strong on our engagement, where we believe active ownership is, or what I call active ownership is basically engaging with companies. And that's what we believe is really, really important. So what for us is what we do is we have what I call engagement milestones. When we engage with a company, we then follow up with them to see, okay, you've said you're trying to, for example, have a certain target on either emissions values or reduction in emissions for a certain year. We would then go back with them next year and then talk to them again and say, okay, have you actually reached these goals? And if not, why not? Or what are you doing to reach these certain goals? And if they are really drastic, and if for example, there is a controversy related to this company and they have not followed up on what they have promised on, this could lead even to a divestment if it's really, really terrible in terms of the scandal or the implications going forward, and our engagement would not lead to any fruitful changes, then this could possibly lead to that. So this is really important, the continuous engagement with the company to understand. Now, but don't get me wrong, they're also in the industry, they're also this, well, there's also the not just greenwashing on the company side, but there's also now where people are thinking where engagement is also another term of greenwashing, where investment managers are only saying, oh, we're engaging with the companies and that's great, you know, and we're just going to keep it that like that. Yeah. But what's important for us is that we continuously monitor our engagements. We have statistics, we write them down. We even publish our report on engagement, our active ownership report on a yearly basis. And I think that's really important to follow up on what we're doing so that even on engagement, there's no greenwashing.
That is very interesting. I think that is, I mean, the fact that, you know, you can kind of hide greenwashing everywhere, it's an interesting point you just brought up there. And obviously, you know, one of my questions that I was also thinking about, you know, as I said before, the spectrum of that definition of what defines, you know, sustainable investing, you know, what does it start and end with? Kind of maybe you can it doesn't have to be too in-depth, just a little like, does it start with the investment management company? Does it include the ethics and the history also of the investor? How mm-hmm. sustainable does the investment itself have to be? You know, all these type of things. If, like, are you looking at the client and their motives? Is that a consideration? Just to tell people a little, okay, what is ESG also in practice? What do you look for? Maybe just a few key points.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the ESG spectrum is wide. It's huge. And there are so many actors and players that play a role in pushing the sustainable investing movement or ESG movement or ESG, so, you know, ESG in general. So on one hand, we can start off with the client side, you know, especially since we're in wealth and asset management and we deal a lot with clients and private clients and so forth. It really is clients, the type of clients who want to invest to do good. So these are the type of clients who then come to us and say, hey, listen, I would like to invest in a fund that has a certain underlying, I wouldn't call it ethical, because I believe ESG is way past ethics in general. And that's in my view, because ESG in end of the day is really a financial term, I believe, because it's about incorporating ESG information. So the clients that come to us about, you know, they're telling us, hey, I want to invest and I have my personal beliefs and I want to invest in a certain way that follows these beliefs. And that could be, for example, not investing in a certain industry, or, for example, they don't want to invest in industries that have animal testing, you know, so to speak. And for us on the industry side, the investment side, that's an exclusion criteria. And that's okay, fair enough. That does touch a bit about ethics from the client side, as I say it. But on the investment manager side, it's really about ESG information. Okay, I'm excluding these companies, and then I'm going to be looking at certain criteria on the other companies and how good they are in their governance and so forth. So you have types of clients that want to do this and believe in it and then come to us as investment managers and say, hey, can you then invest in a certain way? So that's one spectrum. And then there is the other side, where is there's the data providers and so forth, who then connect with the companies, who then get the information of this ESG information or ESG finance, ESG analysis. And companies also provide now, for the last couple of years, huge amount of information or data in their ESG reporting, which then is then retrieved from this data providers, I would call, who are then used by investment managers like us, who use the information in our analysis, who then choose our companies, and then we have a fund who then fulfills our clients' motivations and considerations. So it's a little bit of a, I would say, like a tree going all around here a little, you know, there's everyone playing a part. There's also now regulation, you know, you talked about guidelines. There are very, very strict guidelines, in my view, on what we can or cannot invest. And it's from two sides. One, there's guidelines that investment managers themselves set. For example, in Berenberg, we have our own ESG policy. We have our own ESG exclusion policy. That means certain type of commodities or that we're not that we don't invest in, or certain types of industries that we don't invest in, for example, pornography and so forth. And then there's also external guidelines that are given to us by regulation on what we put, what they perceive as ESG, and if we do that, do we then sort of call check the box? So there are all these actors that play a part in this whole ESG universe. Starts with the clients on what they want, and then it's the investment managers who actually incorporate the client's wishes using ESG information that comes from companies, and companies create the information who then give it to data providers who then provide it to investment managers like us. And then there's regulation who makes sure that whatever we say and the analysis that we do is actually accurate and true and so forth. So that's a little bit of the ESG spectrum. I hope that was clear.
Yeah. Right now, who or where is ESG regulated when you talk about the external criteria?
So in Europe, we have a lot of regulations. So we have, for example, like in Germany, we have, for example, BaFin coming on, you know, and telling us certain funds on how they should be, how what kind of exclusion criteria are considered when we want to, for example, name a sustainable fund, you know. So they've got BaFin here who comes in and regulates the German fund industry, so to speak. And then from the European side, there's a European Commission who also has their sustainable, I'd call the European Commission Sustainable Committee, or so to speak, also called, that actually then has, for the last couple of years, released a lot of regulation in terms of how we would name certain funds and how we would actually not name certain funds, but if we were to have certain funds according to certain categories in ESG, how they should be perceived. So we have that in EU going on. So that's been there for the last couple of years. And of course, you know, I can't speak so much for the markets outside of Europe. But for example, in the US, there is also a huge going on there with the SEC pushing also ESG and how ESG would be incorporated. And of course, in Asia, it's also booming. But in Europe, there is huge regulation coming from the EU Commission.
With all of these things and implications surrounding major companies, I have now the view that I think investing actually is a very political thing, in my opinion. I don't know if you will share this opinion, but I think it is very political, because I think, you know, what are huge companies without their investors? You know, if nobody invested in these companies anymore, what would they be? If we're talking now, for example, just about like the worst of the worst, like Chevron, Exxon, Total, BP, just to name a few, what would they be without their investors? Like, probably not much. So for me, I think investors have, well, a huge responsibility, and I think there's a moral compass there that should be used, which is obviously, you know, there's a huge discrepancy between that, because profits, as I said before, the biggest profits in our world and our capitalist system just come from, you know, very very dirty sources, and are often just still ones that are part of a fossilized industry and a fossil world. So I want to know from you, do you think that the finance world is actually ready for true change? If there, which depends on if there are enough genuine change agents in there, or is the majority of green investments and funds, etc., still just a front? Coming back to the greenwashing, you know, just to keep up, which are just there to keep up the status quo. Do you think there's enough genuine, you know, just want for change also from the side of people who are working in the finance industry and who are making their profits and living off of that?
You know, 5-6 years ago, I would say no. I would say a lot of people were unsure what this is and not even ready to change, you know. I think there was a lot of pushback a couple of years ago in terms of, should we even look at ESG? Is that necessary? Why are we doing this? But I've absolutely changed my mind now, and especially as I've been in the industry a couple of years, I genuinely see and feel and believe that there are a lot of people who are in the industry trying to change and who are doing this to really make the change and believe intrinsically on using ESG information. I mean, we call this ESG information, but end of the day is trying to push companies to do better. Because why? Because then they make products that are better, you know, that are healthier, or, you know, they produce products like solar panels that will help the environment and push technology that will push this way. And I believe that it is changing, and I believe that intrinsically people want to change and are doing this. And of course, just like in any industry, in any place, there are people who will be skeptical about this, and there will always be skeptics. But I believe truly that, I mean, this is from coming from me, that, and you know, the people that I have in my circle really are really doing this for the change, because you cannot join ESG if you don't want to change. You don't want there to be change. If not, it is just going to be a struggle. So I see actually that that, you know, in your, just answering your question, yes, I believe that there, the ESG movement, the ESG, you know, ESG people who are in this are influencing and changing the way the industry is and will be and is going forward. As you can see, the regulation the last couple of years has skyrocketed. Why? That's because we are pushing this. And as ESG is growing, there's more demand for this and there'll be more change. And I think it's only going in the right way.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's always the important thing, that you cannot just look at, you know, like the investment management industry as a whole or ESG and say, oh, it's genuine or it's not genuine. I think it's important, very much important. Like for me, I'm also very like suspicious, I must say, also of certain institutions. It's like, where are these guidelines coming from? You know, you're saying the guidelines are coming from the EU Commission. It's like, again, there are people there who are genuine, who are not genuine. There are guidelines or policies coming out of there that are questionable, and others which are maybe genuinely doing good. So I think it's also important to just actually speak to people, because I mean, every institution, every major bank, everything that, you know, could have also a very negative connotation to it, has, you know, people in there who are working on doing something good, who are actually genuine. I mean, me talking to you right now, I completely believe you're genuine and that you believe in what you're doing and that you're doing good work. But I think it's still important to also have these conversations and remember that not everything is just black and white, but that there are different kind of nuances to things. There are different people involved with different ethics, different views, and also different goals for that matter. So I also want to know something that is actually my father brought this up, and I actually want to include this question, which is, obviously in the investment industry, you know, it, as we talked about before, profits obviously integral, like what would be investing be without it? Yeah. So for also maybe investors out there who may be listening, in your opinion, is it possible to implement an ESG strategy without sacrificing returns?
Yes. Look, which is the whole reason of ESG integration. We're not here to sacrifice returns. We are here to choose companies. We're just using, end of the day, we're just using additional information to choose companies. And so the whole reason of using ESG is to ensure we have returns and not sacrifice anything like that. If anything, ESG, in my view, is a mitigating risk factor. It's using it to ensure we don't invest in companies that have long-term risk. And I know there's huge debates on this, on, you know, investing in ESG, I'm going to lose my returns, I'm not going to get what I want. But in the long term, there is only upwards. So why I say this is also not just from experience in the industry, also from an academic side. I wrote my PhD thesis on the negative effects of, for example, fines and scandals. And what I found is that in the long term, when you invest in companies that have negative scandals, you just have negative returns.
Yeah.
And so it only shows that if you invest in good companies, you would have profits. I mean, not profits, but it's only good for you to invest in companies that are good and those that don't have scandals and controversies. And, you know, this was backed up with my research. And this is something that we've also implemented. And I feel very proud to say that we could use academic information and I've implemented that in our strategies where we do not invest in companies that have what we call red flags or very serious controversies, because we think in long term, there's just risks. And we don't want these risks to be in our portfolios because why? We want long-term returns. So answering your question, I believe incorporating ESG is all about trying to mitigate risk. And in the end, what is that? It's also trying to ensure that we have long-term returns.
Yeah, because in that kind of talking about that point, would you say, and I have a kind of like a follow-up question to that, mm-hmm. would you say if that generally investing in like a huge, really huge, dirty company, maybe one of the biggest in the world, I'm always coming back to the fossil fuel companies because they're obviously, you know, the biggest players out there.
Yeah.
So investing in those would obviously often give you huge returns if you're a good investor. I mean, there are probably bad investors out there everywhere as well. And then if you would invest in a company that is like really like a pure player, very green, very much kind of everything is compatible with the ESG guidelines, that generally in that case, the returns are smaller just because of the nature of these companies.
I mean, it depends again on, I mean, the type of fund, right? If you're looking at investing in small caps, you know, then, you know, their returns are usually smaller, but it's not really the amount of return. You're talking about the increase, right, of the growth of these companies. And the more innovative, I believe, or we believe, the more innovative a company is in long term, I think it's better. Just to give everyone and the listeners an understanding, for us, we believe in investing in companies that do not have ESG scandals and so forth. And also, we do have certain criteria in our exclusion policies where we do not invest in companies with fossil fuels. So this is already not something we invest in. So we don't actually have these criteria because we don't actually think they're innovative. Or we think that in general, they have long-term profitability, not profitability, but long-term growth, sustainable growth. So for us, that, which is why we actually don't have this problem really, or we're not always asked about this because it's in general, just not our DNA, you know, and it's not just our philosophy to invest in these kind of companies. You know?
Yeah. I was just also asking more of the interest because I mean, it might be of general interest because I mean for me personally I would obviously if I were an investor I wouldn't like the type of profit or return the money side would always be my lowest you know the lowest thing I would look at which maybe in some eyes would make me a very good investor but for me it would be like important to kind of invest in companies that are actually doing good that are sustainable and also you know just that can exist in the future and be part of a just transition in the world. Because for me, the other stuff just wouldn't have that much significance because I think, you know, this narrow view on just money is something that got us into a lot of messes in the first place. So, you know, when you were talking about risks before, might it be the case that, you know, things like, as you said, these big scandals or, for example, something like an oil spill or like a collapse of a mine, you know, these big risks with these dirty companies that are part of them, do they kind of even out the playing field, in your opinion? you know, for saying that they have such a huge risk, and also where you make so many losses with all these different things that just happen there almost on a regular basis, with human rights violations, with major oil spills or other accidents that have to be maybe cleaned up later, that there is kind of this huge risk involved that levels out maybe the playing field of saying you get maybe a smaller return somewhere else, but in the long run, the difference is not so big because there are just much more risks involved with dirty companies.
I mean, I think you've hit the nail in the head. I mean, that's the whole idea of ESG, is not in the first place trying to avoid these kind of companies that have severe risks. You know, for us, we won't invest in companies that have serious, for example, human rights violations or so forth. We do have certain standards that we incorporate in all our funds. So the whole idea of ESG is to not to be not part of this. It's basically trying to the whole sorry I'm going to step one back the whole idea of ESG is basically to try to before something were to happen, to try and not be part of it. So if there was a huge mine or whatever you call it, scandal or whatever, is that we should know this beforehand through our engagement, through our analysis, that we don't invest in them already, so that when something like this happens, we're not part of it. And yeah. That's the whole idea of ESG, is why we're trying to push this. It's not to be, oh, when it happens, then we're out, you know? The whole idea is for us to beforehand understand these companies, these controversial businesses, the problematic business practices that these companies have, and then understand, are they actually sustainable? Are they actually good to be invested in? And if not, then don't invest in them. I don't think there should be anything about leveling the play field or anything. We shouldn't just invest in these companies that have, in general, very bad human rights violations or in general, don't have really bad, very terrible risks. So that's in my view.
I kind of want to break this up also with a little maybe more personal question, because this, you know, podcast, the conversations here are also very much, you know, about the emotional side of kind of the things that the world is going through, that we're going through, because it's, you know, not just industry and numbers. It's also, you know, there are very personal stories and emotions involved in that. And I think the emotional side is really that where you kind of include people and kind of get them to join like this call for just a different world, and for really genuine change in the world, for regeneration, etc. So maybe could you share what role the climate crisis and all these crises that are kind of just snowballing right now, how does that, if it does, affect your life, maybe your personal life, your state of mind, if you would like to share a little bit of that, what significance that has for you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, just to give everyone and listeners a view, I joined, the reason why I'm even doing ESG is because I really believe in it. And, you know, not just the whole climate situation here, but just in general, I believe that companies should do good, and it just has to be it. I don't know, maybe I'm being too hard. but for me, you know, as I have two kids now, for me, it really touches me very personally, because, you know, I sometimes wonder where will the world be in a couple of years? And, you know, as my kids grow up, what kind of world they would live in. And the work I'm doing, I know this sounds like blah blah to a lot of people, and say, oh, ESG people talk about the change they want to make, and, you know, always talk about the kids and, you know, how it affects the kids. And but for me, that's actually generally true, because I'm very happy that I am working in an industry, or just my role itself is helping to make some kind of change, even if it's just a small little drop in the ocean. And, you know, the strategies that I help to implement together with my team, and, you know, would actually change the course of investment. You know, even if it's just a small investment in our funds or so forth, that's just a little bit of a change that we can make, or I can make, and I'm very happy that's something that I can do. And, you know, a lot of people sometimes are not happy where they are and not happy with the work that they're doing. I'm grateful that I can be and do this and have the opportunity to be responsible to create strategies that would, you know, implement that would have an effect on climate and environment and how companies look at labor standards and how we engage with companies to ask them to push to look at these things. And to me, that's very emotional because I'm living it day by day in my work, and I see and I hope to see that change, which would affect, you know, our investments, which would hopefully in the long term, you know, change companies. And, you know, and then that's to me a great big smile on my face.
Yeah. And also congratulations of now being a mother of two. That's lovely. Yeah, I think also especially I've also talked about this before, and it's actually, I mean, I'm only 21, but I've talked about this with my sister as well. Like, I think especially for women and girls, I think there's been a survey done recently that I saw that, like, I think over 50% of girls and women who haven't had children yet actually said that they were very unsure about whether they wanted to have children, not because they didn't want them, but just because none of us knows, as you said, what the world is going to look like in a few decades and what this world is going to be like, if it's going to be a world that is about living or a world that is about surviving, and if you actually knowingly want to put a child into this world. And I think this is, as I said before, a very emotional topic, and I think it's something that people need to talk a lot more about. And I am just, you know, happy that you have found something where you say you feel like you're genuinely making a change, and something where you feel you can move and influence something in a positive way, which is so important, I think, for all of us individually, to kind of feel like we are part of something that is moving the world into a right direction, during a time where a lot of things seem to be going so terribly wrong.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, of course, I'm being positive, but in every step in someone's career, there's always hurdles and challenges and barriers to get where you are. But my mantra, it's not the word karma, my mantra is really, you know, when one door closes, another one opens. And that just means push forward. Wherever there is a struggle, there will be something else that opens up, and then there will be change that can be done. And for me, there's always struggles, exactly as you say, not just for them out there, who, you know, women out there who are afraid to have kids because they're not sure where or how their kids are going to, or what kind of world their kids are going to live in. I believe that everyone can make some kind of small change. And there'll always be challenges, but we just have to push through, especially as women. We will always face with struggles. But I believe that if it's support, we can always push through, and we should. And I think that we must believe that we can do it, that we are confident, that we're strong enough, and we should just go for it. And I think a lot of women are afraid to do that. And I think that should change. And we should have the confidence to know and do what we believe in.
Also, I want to acknowledge and honor Indigenous and First Nations peoples as custodians of most of planet Earth's biodiversity and bearers of ancient knowledge. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize all Indigenous and First Nations peoples' strength, resilience, and deep connection to nature. Thank you.